From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast.
How Congress as a party and as a government have ceded a piece of India, a piece of Bharat, relinquished sovereignty, more importantly, shrunk our India's borders, thereby creating all the problems our Tamil fishermen brothers and sisters are facing today.
We felt, considering today that the situation of the fishermen is so much a concern, then it is right for the fishermen themselves and the people of Tamil Nadu to know the truth and the whole truth of this matter.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi may have mentioned the tiny uninhabited island of Kachithivu in a parliamentary speech in August 2023, but it never quite made the headlines it has in the last week. The furore over the island comes after a right to information reply received by the BJP's Tamil Nadu unit chief. The BJP has alleged that the territory was ceded to Sri Lanka by the Indira Gandhi government. This, according to the BJP, reflects poorly on the Congress nearly 50 years later and on the ruling DMK in Tamil Nadu. The tiny island has been uninhabited and is largely visited by Indian fishermen during a festival that is celebrated with their counterparts from Sri Lanka. So what then are the long-term impacts of making it sound like Sri Lanka shouldn't have got the island? Sri Lanka for now has said that the issue is an internal Indian issue. The country's foreign minister Ali Sabri brushed aside questions and said that there was no question of anyone else claiming the island. In today's episode, we're in conversation with N. Satyamurthy, who's a policy analyst and political commentator based in Chennai. He was the director of the Chennai chapter of the Observer Research Foundation and has been a close watcher of ties between India and Sri Lanka, as well as India and Maldives. In today's episode, he explains why the Kachithivu issue won't yield electoral gains for the BJP in Tamil Nadu and won't help India in the long run. We started by asking him about the significance of the island for both India and Sri Lanka. He explains why India didn't complain about giving control of the island to Sri Lanka, and he also explains how the two nations in a way pioneered a unique agreement before the creation of UNCLOS, or the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which defines boundaries in the sea, a subject of confrontation in regions like the South China Sea presently. What is the significance of Kachithivu to even Tamil Nadu, and what is its significance between the two nations at all, if any?
Basically, Kachithivu, as you all of us would know by now, is a small islet between India and Sri Lanka. At one point, both countries laid claim to it, citing old records and documents that 1974 agreement and 76 agreement do not contain the word seed as it's being made out. That was about 6 or 7 years before the UNCLOS 1982 came into force. And at that time, India and Sri Lanka drew their IMBL, that is International Maritime Borderline, in a way that Kachithivu fell on the Sri Lankan side. There were very many technical reasons and justification for that. One, Kachithivu is 11 nautical miles from Depth Island, the last inhabited island in Sri Lanka, and 14 nautical miles from Rameswaram. So even if the median line is drawn between the two countries in a way UNCLOS defined it later, Kachithivu would still fall within the Sri Lankan territory. As already former foreign secretaries have said, there was a gentleman's agreement, so to say, to swap Kachithivu was Vadge Bank, W-A-D-G-E, Vadge Bank, is a 10,000 square kilometer water area beyond Kanyakumari, where Sri Lankan fishermen were fishing. There was an arrangement for India to take over Vadge Bank, possibly in return for Kachithivu. There is nothing written there. If you go into the 74 agreements, it doesn't say seed, it doesn't say swap or anything closer to that. All that it says is to give latitudes and longitudes of the IMBL. If you want to talk about the diplomats, they were very careful not to get into a kind of controversy that is being whipped up today. Incidentally, Bharat Bank has hydrocarbon reserves, and maybe last year the government of India has notified the proposal to allocate 3 blocks for gas and oil exploration. Now, anyone with some sense will understand what was the importance what bank had for Indian negotiators at that time. I am given to understand that Indian experts knew there was likelihood of hydrocarbon fines in the Bharat Bank.
So you'd basically say that it wasn't like a bad deal or anything. It was basically two countries just agreeing to sort of set differences aside over issues that stood between them.
Precisely. See, let us look at the world at that time and India at that time. One, we have lost the China war 3 years earlier, right? Since 1956, when Egypt nationalized the Suez Canal, there was an uproar in the international community on the simple question that waterways like that, should they be allowed to be the sovereign property of individual nations or not? This Park Straits that connects or divides India and Sri Lanka, through this agreement, we have kept it, the two of us. It never became an international waterway. At that time, we had concerns about the US in the Cold War era. Today, we have concerns about China. That will not happen. Yes, you can always say US was friends of Sri Lanka at that time. China is a friend of Sri Lanka. These things we have to work out with our neighbors.
With regard to Kachativu, you have a situation where the central government at one point said it wasn't going to go to Sri Lanka with the matter. It has told the Supreme Court that it cannot get back the island. And you've also written that this issue itself is a dead one in the state of Tamil Nadu. Why do you say that it won't be an issue in Tamil Nadu, despite the fact that there's so much sound and fury about it?
Sound and fury is mostly in the North Indian media. And it is reflected here. For 30 years now, since the late Jayalalitha became Chief Minister in 1991, she has been hurling these charges, particularly against the DMK rival, the late M. Karunanidhi, as Chief Minister. Even now, Edappadi Palaniswamy, former Chief Minister, he is doing the same to Karunanidhi's son and present-day Chief Minister, Stalin. Still, they also included the Congress whenever Congress and DMK were allies. But the problem here is, because it has been beaten about so much, it is not an election issue.
N. Satyamurthy says that even at the height of the civil war in Sri Lanka, the island was not an issue that reaped political dividends in the state.
At the height of the LTTE war in Sri Lanka, Mr. Vaiko, who was seen as a spokesman and a public face of LTTE or the Tamil issues in Tamil Nadu, contested the native Virudhunagar Lok Sabha seat in southern Tamil Nadu with the support of ADMK under Jayalalitha. He lost his seat by 50,000 plus votes. So it was not an election issue here, even then. At the height of the ethnic issue, 10 days down the line, Prabhakaran was killed. Then you can imagine the tension that prevailed here. In 2014, the late Sushma Swaraj, before she got elected, was in Tamil Nadu launching a similar campaign on the larger Tamil fishers issue. She even entered the seas in Rameswaram, launching what she called Kadal Tamarai or Sea Lotus campaign. The BJP did not win any seats here. I mean, BJP allies, because of this issue. Of course, Mr. Pon Radhakrishnan won the Kanyakumari seat because of the party's inherent strength and his own candidacy. So even now, it is not an election issue.
N. Satyamurthy says there is a genuine issue of fishermen in Tamil Nadu being caught for trespassing into Sri Lankan waters. Fishermen in India say Sri Lanka has over 150 boats that it seized over the past 8 years. Fishermen also face arrest if they stray into Sri Lankan waters. N. Satyamurthy says these are not the issues the BJP is attempting to talk about when it talks about Kachativu.
But the larger fishers issue is of considerable interest and concern in Tamil Nadu, the whole of Tamil Nadu, and particularly to Rameswaram and Ramanathapuram Lok Sabha seat where our Rameswaram falls. These are two different issues. Let us not try to bring in Kachathivu into the fishermen's issue. For the simple reason, the fishermen locally know there is no fish in Kachathivu to be fished anymore. It may look different from Delhi, political Delhi in particular, right? That is not the case there. The Prime Minister or Mr. Annamalai or other central leaders, they are not talking about the fishing right of fishermen. They are only repeatedly targeting the Congress political rival and DMK in Tamil Nadu as who gave away Kachathivu. That is not an issue here.
In this case, like you said, it's more of a campaign issue, but and India hasn't really said anything to Sri Lanka about it. But how do you view something like this even being said on the campaign trail? Does it put a strain on a country that we don't really have any problem with at present?
It has strained our relationship, full stop. We seem to think there is election only in India. Presidential elections are due in Sri Lanka by October. And the presence is authorized to dissolve parliament anytime now. And anyway, parliament elections are due before August next year. I'm talking about two major elections, presidential and the parliament. So we can't say it is a cabinet issue only here. Even without it, despite that we have helped Sri Lanka in a very big way during economic crisis, there are those who have been campaigning already, even then, even now. Maybe because of the economic crisis, they were keeping their mouth shut because they also did not, they were shocked for words. But today the situation is different. Even in the last 6 months, 3 months or so, there has been a huge anti-India campaign coming up. Some of the big Indian industries associated or identified with the government leadership are investing big time there. And there is a campaign going on specific issues. Like the ecological issue there, political issue there. Last year when the President Ranil Wickremesinghe visited Delhi and signed a series of agreements in the presence of Prime Minister Modi, one of them was energy cooperation. All those things were there. But last month, I think, official delegation, not even a ministerial delegation, a middle level official delegation visited Colombo for furthering their discussions in the matter, that day across Sri Lanka, that is Singla area, which is a majority area, wall posters, anti-India wall posters appeared overnight. It is one question, who is behind it, who was funding it, and all those questions doesn't matter. But that sentiment was there.
N. Satyamurthy points to the fact that there are former Sri Lankan ministers who have support in Sinhala areas and have been accusing India of making investments only to dominate the industry there. He says, even when it comes to fishermen, the two nations are at loggerheads, and a recent document moved by a minister indicates the sentiment in the country against India.
There are political leaders, former ministers who are even now present, they MPs, with some kind of a limited electoral presence in the Singla areas, who have openly said India invested money only to subdue us sector by sector, industry by industry. So these are our political issues. And remember, in the Tamil areas also, fishing is a huge problem. They are not saying that they want to share for a livelihood issue is common to both them and the Indians. They don't want us. Last month again, their fisheries minister, Douglas Devananda, a Tamil, has moved what is called a position paper in the cabinet for creating a civil defense force of Tamil fishers to protect themselves against the Tamil fishermen from India. You can understand what it is intended to do or it will mean in the mid-seas. They are possibly replacing the Sri Lanka Navy with this civil defense force, which will have legitimacy. Of course, it has not been taken up by the cabinet, nor has it been converted into an organization or outfit or whatever. But that is the mood in Sri Lanka.
The big worry for India, at least earlier, before the economic crisis, was that China was too close to Sri Lanka. Does this sort of sentiment then push Sri Lanka back towards China because they just see it as a more convenient relationship?
So I wouldn't say that. For a simple reason, there are India-friendly leaders, India-friendly people, China-friendly leaders, China-friendly people. The balance of convenience, I mean, logistics and other things, the majority of them are India-friendly. We have to work over time to ensure that they don't suspect India. They don't convert to being neutral first and pro-China later because they suspect India. This is an extreme necessity for India for us to maintain that relationship. India today is not what India was 70 years back when Kachatriya agreement was signed. Today, India is strong and says it is strong, and the world believes it is strong. We have to meet with our neighbors through bilateral prism and not through hyphenated relationship. China, Maldives, China, Sri Lanka, China, Nepal and other things just don't work. In the post-Cold War era, sovereignty of individual nations count more than earlier. That is one of the reasons why we are in a multipolar world and there is no bipolar world as during the Cold War. In these circumstances, this government started with the neighborhood first policy announcement, which was always there. No one gave it a name and title. So it is incumbent upon this government even more and even future governments to raise about all these things and behave like an elder brother and not a big brother in the eyes of our neighbors. We have to remember only one thing, that just as we are watching China or US or China and US, earlier US and Soviet Union, all our neighbors are small. And their preoccupation is watching India, for good, bad and ugly. So, not many people in this country aware of that. And those who are aware of it don't understand the dynamics of it.
Then, how do you view India then making these statements about its neighbors? And it's not even India making these statements. It's more a sort of a social media campaign or something like that, which are internal campaigns that seem to drum up political support here in some way. How do you view that, given that its target, in a sense, is a country in the neighborhood?
See, if you are referring to a boycott Maldives campaign in the recent past, to say, take only an example, it was a disastrous campaign. Yes, three deputy ministers in that government, which was already perceived by as anti-India by the Indian media, from as far as I can see from in the Maldivian newspapers and even Indian official press statements. Yes, there is a strain, visible strain, but they are trying to working over it or around it. But the Indian media went all out, social media even worse. Just because three ministers had a comment to make against India, or even the Indian Prime Minister, which was defamatory, of course. There are official channels to take it up with the government there. If you look at even Maldives or Sri Lanka, other than editorial news and all that, social media is the Maldivian side, for instance, only the president speaks. No minister speaks on India. That kind of a situation should arise here. Yes, there are differences. Maybe some of it need to be aired, but not in the social media. The minute someone in Delhi understood that this has not gone down well, or the way it might have been perceived, the social media campaign against boycott Maldives, it stopped all of a sudden. Who was holding the key? That question arose in Maldives, the streets of Maldives. They haven't stopped asking that question of themselves.
Do we do this? Are we habituated to do this sort of election campaigns where we say anything we want against anything and anyone and we just expect them to forgive us? Have we done this before or is this a new dynamic that we are also...
For instance, if we take Unde Kachathivu, this has been a political drama in Tamil Nadu I won't say even a drama, something more campaign point or a factual or whatever you want to believe. Government of India leaders, if they are that the Congress that was being attacked, they would rebut it. Or if even if it is the BJP, for instance, 1998-99, Vajpayee was the Prime Minister for 6 years, even in 2004. The central government was very clear not to commit itself or comment on any of these things that would be seen as affecting good neighborly relations, and they should not become anti-India. That was an extra care they took at that time. I think that is slipping up, or that has slipped up in these recent months.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh and Sahil Gupta. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TOI Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at toipodcast@timesinternet.in.